All right, you're now tuned in to the Follow Through with Clips and Drew, the True Players Podcast, episode 319. It's playoff time. It's play-in time. The Lakers beat the Pelicans and got Drew's worst enemy, the Denver Nuggets. We give you our playoff predictions. Jonte Porter, good riddance. Blake Griffin deserves a statue. And I got the lowdown on Kawhi Leonard. It's the Follow Through with Clips and Drew. Drew, give me some play-in music. What up, podcast world?
What's up, everybody?
You know what it is. You know where you're at. It's the Follow Through with Clips and Drew, the True Players Podcast, episode 319. The play-in games did not disappoint, Drew. Your Lakers beat the Pelicans. Zion had 40, 11, and 5, was on a tear until, you know, he got hurt. He was on a roll. Who would have known what had happened if he stayed in the game? Lakers pull it out. Now the Lakers are going to see the Nugs, exactly what you didn't want to happen. Drew has been begging and lobbying for the Lakers to get OKC in the first round, but that just isn't going to happen. You know, we had discussed you could have tried to throw that game against the Pels and risk playing the winner of Golden State or Sacramento, but if you lose that game, then you're just out of the playoffs, so it's safer to beat the Pelicans, which you did. And now you have the matchup that you definitely didn't want. And the Lakers, you know, are ready for the postseason. But then Darvin comes out. Darvin wants all the smoke with the returning champs. Do you want the smoke, Drew? Are the Lakers ready for Joker and the defending champs in round one? What you got, man?
Of course I don't want the smoke. This is the last thing I fucking wanted to have happen. And look, you know, this comes down to, unfortunately, your boy, our guy, the alien, Victor Wembanyama, ruined my Laker dream postseason. Because if we're going back to, you know, in between our last podcast and what's been taking place, we had the last two games of the regular season in which Victor Wembanyama beat this Nuggets team in the second last game of the regular season, which then forced the unfortunate circumstances that we now have the Nuggets in the two seed and Oklahoma City in the one. So, dude, I was begging for my Lakers to sit LeBron and Anthony Davis in the second half. We very easily could have said, you know, LeBron's ankle is acting up. Anthony Davis went out with back spasms.
An eye injury.
Well, but he went out with back spasms in the very last regular season game against the same New Orleans Pelicans, in which the Lakers played literally the best game of the season. That very last game for the regular season for the Lakers was incredible. We were all over the place. The Pelicans didn't want anything to do with us. And then, of course, what ends up happening is the worst possible scenario. So here's the drill. I wanted us to lose that game and then roll the dice with the Kings or the Warriors. At home, we would have been at home in that scenario. We would have, you know, had the game in L.A. And yes, the major concern is that anything can happen in a one-off, right? You don't know necessarily that you would be able to beat the Kings is who it would have ended up being, or the Warriors for that matter, because the last time the Warriors played in crypto, they had the best shooting night of the entire season. They made like almost 30 threes in that game, and we lost, I think, by double digits. So while I understand that it never makes sense to throw a game like that, you want to lean into the certainty, you want to get into the postseason. To me, if we aren't good enough to beat the Kings or the Warriors in a one-off playoff matchup and have that confidence to do that at home, we're definitely not good enough to do much in this postseason. But that's neither here nor there anymore. We decide to play all the way out. We had a nice lead on the Pelicans. They came roaring back behind Zion before the injury. I do think there's a really good chance we ended up losing that game if Zion stays in the game and doesn't get injured. But now we're squaring up. And look, the only pivot here the only pivot here is to do exactly what Darvin Ham said and just accept it and say, look, this is revenge time. This is time to get back at this team that swept us last year. But every single one of those games was a very, very close, hard fought matchup. Now, the good thing for us in this matchup against the Nuggets, while it's my least favorite option, is they're not as deep as they were last year. their bench is not as solid as it was. No Bruce Brown. And, you know, Christian Brown's still quite good. Peyton Watson is stepping up tremendously for them and actually turning out to be their best rim protector, which is incredible. The guy just can't stop blocking shots, even though he's, whatever, 6'8 or 6'9. But Jamal Murray is really what changed the series for the Lakers in the last postseason in that Western Conference Finals matchup. He turned into Hall of Fame Jamal Murray for that entire series, had incredible efficiency scoring and assisting in that series. And Jokic was good, obviously, as well. So was the rest of the squad. But Jamal Murray right now is still coming off of a banged up season. He's been pretty healthy for the whole year, but has missed a litany of games over the course of the year, and was on minutes restriction all the way to the end of this regular season. So obviously he's going to have a few days off to rest and recuperate, try to get to as close as 100% as he can. But if we can catch this Denver Nuggets team before they really start rolling downhill, maybe this could work out for us. I am delusionally optimistic here, because what did happen after we lost to the Nuggets is a lot of shit talking. And if there's one thing that I think this team will hang their hat on, this Lakers team will hang their hat on, is the pride. And I think pride will matter a lot in this series. I don't think we're good enough to beat them. I really don't. And if I had to guess, my guess is we probably lose in 5 or 6 games in this series. But with how good LeBron and Anthony Davis have been playing, how locked in Austin Reeves is right now, how locked in D'Angelo Russell really
D'Lo,
is.
D'Lo, let's talk D'Lo, man.
I think there is a chance for us to make this interesting. Now, in order for us to do anything like this, we have to steal one of the first two games. There's just no path forward if we go 0-2 in Denver to start this series out, in my opinion. We got to steal game one or game two. And that has to be off of the back of D'Angelo Russell having a solid performance offensively, of course, but defensively. This was the series that he was, you know, essentially left on the bench in the back end of last season. Everyone will remember this. He had really solid performances for us in the series leading up to the Western Conference Finals and last year's playoffs. And then when we asked him to actually have to play some defense, he shit the bed. So a lot of this series, in my opinion, will come down to those two guys that I just mentioned, Jamal Murray on Denver and D'Lo on the Lakers. So like I say, I'm delusionally optimistic because I am a Lakers fan. I'm always going to root for my team, and I still have a small percentage belief. It's almost like a Dumb and Dumber. So you're saying there's a chance. There is definitely a chance when you have LeBron and AD is playing as good as they are playing right now. But it just feels like we're going to meet our demise in this very first round.
I think you definitely have a shot at this. If you get the version of D'Lo that was against the Pelicans, I mean, D'Lo's been great all year. Let's be real. Until, you know, when the trade deadline was over and he felt that weight off his shoulders, he's been performing great. And I thought he was great that game. I love the beef between him and Alvarado going back and forth at it. I thought that was great. And normally when D'Lo gets shook like that and somebody's in his head, he normally doesn't do too well in those situations. And he did really well. I think you dodged a bullet with Zion getting hurt, because Zion was on a tear. Right. You know, those last, it was the fourth quarter, right? Like it was midway through the fourth.
Yeah. I mean, he banged his wrist in the third, and I think it was, somewhere in the middle of the fourth, I believe, is when that hamstring thing happened.
Bro, how about the charge LeBron took on Zion? That shit took him off of his feet, like legit off his feet. You know, he regretted that. And LeBron is a tank as well, dude. And I don't think he was trying to sell it at all. Like, maybe there was a little bit of sell, but you got to be quite crazy to step in front of Zion like that. That shit was insane.
Absolutely. Yeah, that, I mean, it definitely lifted him off his feet. I do not think he expected it to come with that sort of force, for sure. I had an instance once in high school, this is not the same, where I tried to just play a defensive stance, and the guy that I was guarding was a very big guy who went full bore in me and literally lifted off my, it was a textbook charge, because I was literally just standing there not expecting him to, I thought maybe he was going to do a little pull up. He drove right in the middle of my chest, and I lifted both feet off the ground. It was almost an acrobatic kind of a deal. And I bet a lot of people in the crowd were like, man, he really sold that charge. No, when you have a big body like this, this is what happens when you get trucked like that. And so, yeah, big shout out to LeBron for taking the charge. I think that also puts into perspective, you know, where we are as a team and what we actually want to achieve, and what we're willing to sacrifice and what we're willing to do in order to get there. But, you know, this is This is the thing. You said it perfectly, you know, in the lead up. This was the thing we were trying to avoid. Mm-hmm. So, like I say, Darvin Ham's statement is, this is it. Like, this is what we have to, this is what our season has come to. And look, when it comes to playing the Nuggets, I truly believe whether it was going to be in this first round or whether that was going to be in the Western Conference Finals for this Lakers team, we're going to have to go through them at some point. So, you know, pushing that off may have given us some sort of advantage, may have given us some sort of confidence, a little buildup to, you know, oh, maybe we can actually make the finals kind of a deal. But, you know, let's get it out of the way now. That's how I'm looking at it. And we have no choice. And I think we will compete. It, at the very least, it will be, you know, we could get swept, but it'll be just like it was last year, where every single one of these games was the dogfight.
I think you're going to have to match their energy. You brought up Christian Braun and Christian Braun and Peyton, right? And I remember at the beginning of the year, we were talking about, you know, keys to at the beginning of the year before the season started. And I mentioned Peyton because of his defensive ability, his athleticism, how he's got a really great nose for the ball. I like these kids, and they're going to have to match. The Lakers are going to have to match their energy and outsmart Joker. But one thing that I want to say is, obviously you have Jamal and you have Joker and you have Michael Porter Jr. Yep. I think, and we're going to talk about Jonte, what happened with Jonte later in the show, but I think this is going to affect Michael Porter Jr. Mm. I do. I think the constant questions, think about it, man. Like, everybody's going to be asking Michael Porter Jr. his thoughts. This is, you know, his brother just got banned from the NBA after going to bat for him, saying there's no way my brother did this. When I'm pretty sure Michael probably knew that his brother did this. Like, if you, like, you know, you ask your brother, like, hey, bro, keep it real with me. Did you do this or not? And if Jonte said no, Michael was probably like, I believe my brother. Now his brother's done lied to him. Media is going to be all in his grill. He's going to lose focus. And Michael Porter Jr. is super important to them winning not only the series, but, you know, trying to go back to back. And if he's flustered in the brain, this could be a time to strike for the Lakers. That's what I'm thinking.
I like that. I'll take anything I can get at this point. So if it's a distraction from Michael Porter Jr. that makes him, you know, shoot a little bit less from three and be a little less efficient, I'll fucking take that. But I actually kind of think that's where we're going to hide D'Lo. So he'll have plenty of opportunity to get his shots and get his looks. He can just shoot right over top of D'Lo. When we look at these matchups, I mean, maybe we can hide D'Lo, try to put him on KCP. But KCP's very active offensively. You know what I mean? Like, he's not going to necessarily be the one that scores 25, you know, 30 points, but he's going to do backdoor cuts. He's going to go get those offensive rebounds that lead to second chance points. That's where we really struggle. When we are at our best, it's when we're limiting offenses to one shot. We gobble up that rebound. We get out in transition, and then we have our transition buckets or our secondary break where we score fast. I'll be very, very interested, too, to see how Anthony Davis does in this series, right? You know, there is an opportunity for him. When you just look at what they're going to put on him defensively, he should be able to kind of handle Aaron Gordon if that's the matchup. If it's Jokic himself, he should be able to, you know, get by Jokic, athletically speaking, and bring him out a little bit, not necessarily post him up. But I do think there is going to be an advantage for AD on the offensive end. Of course, a lot of this will really be dependent upon the Lakers' defense. That's really what it's going to come down to.
Sactown, Golden State. Sactown got to light the beam against the Warriors, eliminating the Warriors for the third time in 5 years. All the talk was about how awful Klay was, going 0 for 10 from 3.
Yeah.
It was also – man, this was funny. It was also so bad that Twitter's new trending AI feature – released that Klay was on a vandalism spree in Sacramento, vandalizing houses and businesses with bricks because of all the Twitter talk about Klay throwing up bricks.
Yep.
First thing, like, in a world full of fake news, we don't need faker news. This AI Twitter trending shit needs to stop. That's just ridiculous.
Pointless. It's a pointless thing.
Just what happened to journalism, dude? Figure out what happened, make your points, but we don't need AI coming up with Klay Thompson is roaming the streets of Sacramento throwing bricks through people's windows. I hate it. Look, that was an awful game. And I want to talk more about Klay here in a minute. It was a really bad game. And Sacramento came out and kicked their ass. That's just basically the bottom line of what happened. But there's more questions that I have than about, like, the Golden State loss. Like, the question is, you know, is this the end? Mm-hmm. Like, is this the end? Is this the end of one of the greatest dynasties in NBA history? Is it the end of one of the greatest threesomes? No Diddy, but best threesomes to ever happen. You know, is this the end of Klay Thompson being a Warrior? These are the bigger questions that we need to ask, because Steph is 36 and not getting any younger. Klay is obviously no longer two-way Klay. We've talked about Klay and we've talked about Draymond all year. So this isn't any shocking news.
Yeah.
But, you know, is this the end of the dynasty? And I think it is. All great things run its course, right? And it's blatantly obvious. The writing's been on the wall for the past 2 years, especially with Draymond. And you and I have covered this extensively, like extensively. The highs and lows of Klay Thompson. Yes, we love Klay Thompson. We don't like talking bad about Klay Thompson, but 0-10 in a knockout game, it's a big deal. And if you're not producing, you're not producing. And if Draymond is going to keep going with the antics, the shit ain't been the same since Jordan Poole. We all know this. Mm-hmm. And I don't want to spend a lot of time talking about Draymond. It's more about having to keep Steph, right, for these next 2 or 3 years where he's still performing at and not necessarily an MVP level, but an all-NBA level. He's a top 10, top 5 player in the NBA, and you're going to have to surround him with talent. And honestly, I don't think their young talent is bad. I like Pods. I like the progress of Kuminga. I like Jackson Davis. I think they really have some pieces, but it's more of, you know, I think the things run its course, and I think – by the way that Klay Thompson walked off the court in Sacramento, I got chills saying this, man, because I think there's a lot of beauty in defeat. All right. I think there's a lot of beauty. We all talk about ball is life, right? And most people call it like ball is life. Basketball is my life. Nah, basketball is kind of life, like life. We have wins, we have losses, we have failures and defeats, we have triumphs and comebacks and all this shit. And sometimes in life, man, all of us in triumph and defeat, we take no time to smell the roses. And I think that is what Klay Thompson did. He knew he had an awful game. He knew that this was probably his last game as a Warrior. I think he knows more than we know. And not being pissed off and kicking the chairs and throwing your jersey, he took a minute to really take it in. And unfortunately, like, most people are going to think about this awful game and not think about the amazing things that Klay Thompson and this trio have done over the past 10 years, dominating the NBA. So it made me really happy that Klay took a minute. You know what I mean? That's what I noticed. You can have the worst game in the world. You can have the worst day in the world, but you need to take a minute and be like, shit, I'm blessed to even fucking be here. I've come back from two huge injuries. People thought I was never going to play again, but now we're at this point. And I think it's the end, Drew. Do you?
Yeah. So that was really difficult to watch. What I will say, although the numbers are 0-10, 6 of those shots were down. They were down and out. Like, it was one of those moments where Klay could have very easily had 6-10, 17 points or whatever, and the Warriors win the game, really. I mean, that's what it could have been. But specific to the game, this was much more about the turnovers from the Warriors and the intensity of the Kings in that game. That was the most intense game I have ever seen the Kings play, and that goes back decades. That crowd was ready. Those boys were ready. Keon Ellis had the night of nights. Steph Curry had turnovers. He didn't look the same. Draymond was ineffective. Sabonis was like trying to be as physical as he could possibly be. So really, this game to me came down to this: the Kings wanted this way more than the Warriors did, and the Warriors just had a shitty game. Specific to Klay, I think if anyone watches that exit as he's leaving the stadium, he does a 360 around the arena, looks at it once, takes a couple deep breaths, and you can kind of see it on his face. I think it is the end for him. I don't think they're going to part with Draymond Green, though. I do think Draymond's going to be there next year and moving forward for the remainder of that contract. You know, who knows how long necessarily he'll fill out that contract or not. But Steph and Draymond, I do think, will be there next year. I think Klay will probably move on. And I don't think it's necessarily the wrong thing for him to do. I think he's going to have offers on the table from the likes of the Heat and the Clippers and the Lakers and other organizations that will throw him that'll throw him some money, man. They really will. And I think he still is, like, going back to that last Lakers Warriors game, he had an incredible performance. So he still can reach these peaks and look like at least the offensive version of Klay that we've seen. The defense is not there anymore, but he still has these moments. So I'll be really sad if that's the last that we get to see Klay in a Golden State Warriors jersey, because we know that he can give more than that, even at a slightly diminished version of what he is athletically speaking. And man, dude, like I say, six of those shots were, they just looked like they were going to go in the basket. And for whatever reason, if you believe in God or whatever you believe in, it was just not in the cards for Klay in that particular evening. So I am of the mindset that I think they should bring him back. I think he should take a pay cut. I think he should embrace the Kyle Korver of it all now and say, look, what do you need me to do? I can come into spurts. I'm going to focus on my catch and shoot a lot more. Let me make sure that I'm as efficient as I can be possibly with that. I can play for 4 or 5 minute spurts. I don't need to be starting every game. Let's give pods my starting role or something along those lines. And I think he should just ride it out and stick with this organization. That's just my own personal ambition. But I would understand entirely if he moves on to a different organization. It feels like that's what's going to happen.
I think out of respect, I think the Warriors are going to offer Klay a deal, but it's going to be a deal that Klay, you know, isn't going to like.
Well, he turned down the 2 for $48. He turned down earlier this year, 2-year, $48 million. I don't know if that number is going to be there now.
I don't think that's coming back.
And I think he may end up regretting that number that he's turned that down. I mean, I understand from, you know, again, going back to pride here, I brought it up when talking about the Lakers. There's a lot of pride on the line for a guy like Klay Thompson. He was snubbed from the All 75 team amidst, the chronic injuries that he had. And that probably played a part in him being 77th or whatever out of 75. He held a lot of pride on the line when it came to that thing. And I think, you know, we've seen him try to readjust his own perspective on what he is in this NBA now, given, you know, what he can be athletically and what he can contribute to a team. So look, man, I think he'll regret turning that 2 for $48 down, but I do, again, I think maybe 3 for $60 might be coming his way from the Warriors. And I think he's going to have to take a really hard, long look at that and say, like, what do I want out of the next 2-3 years that I have left in this league?
I think that there's a lot of teams that could use a Klay Thompson, the version of a catch and shoot, three-point shooter. I brought up Orlando. Philly's going to have a lot of money next year. I want to bring up again, like, if we're trying to surround Wembo with the right guys, like, freaking the Spurs, right? Like, look at it. And also going back to talking about ball is life and whatnot, also like new opportunities, you know, that you have a chance to reinvent yourself. A lot of players have done that throughout their career.
Yeah.
And maybe it's just run its course with the Warriors. Everybody wants to stay with the team that they were drafted by their whole career. But most of the time, 90% of the time, it doesn't work like that. And there is a respect factor that, you know, Klay deserves this amount of money and whatnot, but you're still trying to build a team. Again, you and I have done this so many times. We've talked about Klay Thompson and building another championship team. It's the same thing with Luka and with Kawhi and with Embiid. You have a small window, man, to really make this shit work. And honestly, you brought it up when you were talking about the effort of Golden State. I think Steph is kind of over this year too. Like, I just think they've kind of just – It's over. They know that they don't have enough to win a championship, and maybe their heart just wasn't in it this year. And when your heart's not in it, that means that there needs to be changes to be made. And it's not bad changes, like, oh shit, we got to get rid of Klay Thompson. It's more of, man, let's send Klay like they did with Russell Westbrook and whatnot. Maybe a sign and trade or something like that that they could do to send Klay to where he wants to go. Maybe it's the Lakers. You know, you've always wanted a guy like Klay Thompson.
Would love it.
That can stand in the corner and hit those threes. Maybe LA is the next place for him. But I think we both agree that it's a wrap for him. I think Draymond should go too, though, Drew. I do. Mm-hmm. I think that's over too, because it's not the same without Klay there.
Right, right. No, I understand that. But I think trading Draymond Green is a much harder task than letting Klay Thompson go in free agency. That is a very easy thing to do. I mean, you know, it might not be emotionally easy, but it's like, okay, fine. Like, he's going to go take a better deal with more minutes, more money, all that good stuff. That's fine. It's hard to find a landing spot for Draymond Green with all the antics. I just truthfully believe that. I don't know how many teams, we've talked about that a lot as well. I don't know how many teams look at him and say, let's take 3 years, $75 million, and this problem in our locker room, potentially problem in our locker room. So I do think Dre will stay. I think, unfortunately, I do think Klay will go. I'd be very happy to have him as a Laker. We could use him very much, I think. And obviously the legacy of his dad being a Laker legend and all that good stuff is definitely true as well. So I think it would crush our boy Crompton to see Klay wear the purple and gold, but I would definitely welcome him with open arms. It's going to be really weird to see him in a different jersey if that's how it all rolls out.
It wouldn't be the first time though, Drew. It happens all the time. You know what
No,
I mean?
Yeah, it does. It definitely does.
Seeing Blake in a Detroit Piston uniform was like the worst. It's like, this doesn't work. Seeing Patrick Ewing in a Sonics uniform, that shit doesn't work. Seeing Vince Carter, you know, in another jersey, it does, but it happens, man. You could be, you're a god one day, and then you're a commodity, dude, a tradable commodity the next.
Yeah,
and
Hakeem on the Raptors.
Hakeem, a Raptor. That shit doesn't look right at all. Shaq on the Suns? What are you talking
about? Shaq had like six of those. Shaq had like six versions of that.
I know. I think Shaq would look back and be like, you know what? Probably should have called it after Phoenix. Probably should have just called it after. Nobody needs to see me in a Cavs or a Boston Celtics.
The Celtics one crushed me, obviously, for very obvious reasons. But yeah.
I think Klay is like Steph, one of the most universally loved players and liked players. People really like Klay Thompson, minus people in Memphis probably or whatnot. I think the Golden State Warriors are going to do him right. And I hope that Klay can find a new home. And we're talking like he's already gone. They might give him the bag and keep him. Yeah. I don't know.
I don't think it's predetermined yet. The writing, based on body language, everything that we're talking about, and payroll, obviously we have to bring that up. The Warriors are going to have a lot of money going out next year. It does feel like he's gone, but there is a real chance that he's not. And I just want to touch on Steph too, because you brought up something there as well. I think Steph was exhausted.
Yeah, could be.
It's the first time I've seen him go into a postseason looking tired as fuck. And I'm pretty sure his wife is pregnant with their next child. So there's you know, that takes a lot out of a husband, right? Your wife's pregnant. You already have three kids, and Steph's a phenomenal father from all accounts. So he's kind of separating himself into two worlds there. And it's hard to stay on top of things when you have, you know, all of that going on in your home life. You have the rockiness of this entirety of this season with your roster, with your boys. Klay's struggling. I know Steph feels that when his good friend is struggling like that, that wears on you a bit too. Not to mention the fact that he's having to play so many fucking minutes and get so many shots up just to will this team to be a slightly above 500. So this is the first time I've ever seen Steph look exhausted, and we're not even in the postseason. So I think maybe it was just like just one of those years. Maybe we just chalk it up to that.
Well, he looked exhausted. You're totally correct. And I think emotionally exhausted too. Yeah. Like, I'm just emotionally kind of over this year and putting up with all of this stuff. And I think Draymond took a lot out of him, took a lot out of the organization. And again, we've said this for a while now, so it's nothing new, but we all don't like the playoffs without the Warriors. We all want Steph, you know what I mean? We want to watch these guys. So I hope it all works out. But like you said, like the body language, I think Klay knows something that we don't know at the moment. And I think he's played the last game as a Warrior. Let's go to a couple more games. We don't need to spend all night on them, but we had Philly and Miami yesterday. And I just want to tell you,
Do you want to quickly touch on who you think is going to win between the Pelicans and the Warriors and the Kings before we jump?
God, I really don't care if there's no Zion. I mean, I would probably take Sacramento. You know, and I honestly think that the injury to Zion is going to be a 2 week thing, or a three, like if it's a calf, or is that what they said? It's a calf,
a hamstring. Yeah,
hamstring. Yeah, dude. I mean, you're not coming back in 3 days, especially at 295 pounds. And if Zion's not playing, you're so probably going to.
you don't think that the Pelicans, as deep as they are, and Brandon Ingram is back, you don't think that they have a chance against the Kings?
They definitely have a chance against the Kings. And I'm just saying, like, going forward, if we're going to, I'm not going to choose the Pelicans. I would choose Sacramento right now. I mean, they're depleted too. You have no Herder, no Monk and whatnot. It could be a great freaking game. It doesn't matter. Sacramento or Pelicans, if they make it into the first round, that neither one of them is winning without Zion or without Monk and Herder, in my opinion. So who do you got?
I actually don't know who to call in this game. That's why I was wanting to see what you were thinking. The Pelicans could very easily win this game and get into the first round, and then maybe Zion comes back, right? Maybe it's a week-long thing, but hamstrings are really tough, especially when you're a big guy, like you said. And then, you know, Malik Monk is apparently quite close, although he hasn't done any on-court work. They're saying he's close. They're just taking it super cautious with him. And it was like a sprain. It wasn't, you know, there was no actual ligament damage.
I thought it was MCL.
It wasn't, no, there was no ligament damage. It was a sprain. It was a sprain, but not a tear or anything like that. He didn't have to have any surgery. Malik is going to be a free agent this coming year. So my guess is he's going to take it very, very cautiously, regardless of whether or not they advance. But I'm very curious about this game. Look, if the Kings come out with the intensity that they came out with at home in New Orleans, I think they'll win that game, but it'll be very interesting to see how the Pelicans start the game. A lot of their games, you can tell it's a little flat in there. You know, certainly against the Lakers, half the crowd's Lakers fans in New Orleans. It's tough for them to get going, but you know, you could hear it ramping up as they were starting to come all the way back against the Lakers. So we'll see. I think I'd probably lean Kings just because of how locked in, you know, they're shorthanded, but every one of those guys was locked in against that Warriors team. So I guess I would lean Kings.
And where are you, CJ McCollum? Where have you been, bro? Can you show up? They're going to need, because they're definitely going to need you in this next game. Yeah, I can't call it either. Whoever wins that, I just don't think, no matter if it's Kings or Pelicans going into the first round, they don't got enough to move forward. Mm-hmm. Can we talk about Philly real fast?
Let's do it.
Okay, Philly, Miami, my boy Nico Batum, the Batum Battalion, bro. I just want to say how happy I am that he had 20 points last night, 6 for 10 threes. The guy was absolutely on fire. He was everywhere defensively, offensively. He was absolutely lights out. And people are like, who is Nico Batum? I had watched this guy. Nico had done that for the Clippers many, many times. It makes me so sad that they finessed us in Nico Batum. You could have had Rocco along with the, you know, whatever trade we made for James Harden, you know, KJ Martin and whatnot. I wish we still had Nico. He was great in that game. He's the reason why they won that game. And I'm just so proud of him. And I'll tell you this, though. I don't think he has another one for another, like, 2 weeks.
That was a good performance from him. A little bit out of character.
But I've seen him. I've literally seen him do that before. I've seen him drop 25, 28, shooting fucking lights out from three. The catch and shoot threes where he catches it above his head and shoots. Like, nobody can do that, dude. And he's so great at it. I thought Embiid was fine. He looked okay. But I mean, the big story of the game is Jimmy Buckets. Buckets is out. He's going to be out for several weeks. He's done for the playoffs. Miami doesn't have any shot without Jimmy Butler. And we all miss playoff Jimmy. Especially if we would have seen Miami and Boston go back at it again. That's kind of what we wanted to see. I think Jimmy hurt his knee in like the second quarter and continued to play. And then he got hurt again because Jimmy is a dog. But he's hurt and he's out several weeks. And I think Miami's chances and hopes, they're over. And Philly looks good. They don't look great, though, Drew. Like, I'm not really scared of Philly right now. What are your thoughts?
Yeah, Embiid is banged up, right? Mm-hmm. Like, he's still ramping up. You can tell he's sucking wind out there. You know, he's not at the full capacity that he would normally be at. And even when he's at full capacity, he still gets tired. You know, he's a big guy, right? So it's okay to get winded when you're 300 pounds, 7'2" or whatever. So it's going to be a really difficult task for them to take on this Knicks team, even though the Knicks still don't have Julius Randle. They are playing fantastically. They snagged that two seed. And I think it was Paul Reed of all people that came out and said that was the matchup that they were eyeing or whatever, you know, like the Knicks need more bulletin board material. I am excited though, that we're going to get a Knicks Sixers series in the postseason. First time that's happened in a few decades. I think it's like something I've heard maybe 30 something years since those two has faced off in the postseason. Because when the Knicks were good, the Sixers were bad, and when the Sixers were good, the Knicks were bad. So that'll be a fun one, just historically speaking. Yeah. Those are two old teams and old rivals there, but it will be fun because if there is something that the Knicks probably have a weakness, even though they have Mitchell Robinson and they have Hartenstein. They have these guys that can throw a lot of bodies at and throw effort at. Embiid should be able to if he's, you know, going to be able to stay on the court as far as his win goes and his health and maintain his health. He should be able to have his way with them a little bit on the offensive end. But I'm taking the Knicks all day in this series. Me too. You know, you saw Tobias Harris. I mean, Batum won that game. Tobias was terrible. So I think they booed him, actually. I'm pretty sure I heard that.
They were booing early. It wasn't just Tobias. They were booing the Sixers. But yeah. Toby should have gotten booed, too.
Yeah, I thought they were booing him. But they definitely heard boos throughout that game. And that kind of indicates the state of the 76ers, right? Tyrese Maxey is going to have a lot of problems with their defensive pressure that they put on him. And I do think I expect for the Knicks and Tibbs to come up with some sort of scheme to not allow Joel Embiid to just go off and have 30, 40 points. I mean, in this Miami Heat game, where they're a little bit undersized at the center, he only had 23 points and really turned it on in the fourth. And I think he only had like 11 points or something like that going into the fourth. So clearly Embiid is not the MVP Embiid that we saw from last year. I will be shocked if the Knicks take more than five or six games to be. I definitely don't see a seven game series out of this. Could be a clean sweep given how good Jalen Brunson has been throughout this entire season, how good DiVincenzo is playing. McBride is throwing in really good minutes for them as well. We've talked a little bit about the Knicks, but this feels like MSG is going to be just fired up for that game one matchup against these Sixers. I'm mostly just excited to see those first two games at home for the Knicks, and I fully expect them to come out of this series.
I'm going for the Knicks too. I don't think Knicks are my team in the East right now. Like I've mentioned that. I really like them. I love the way they play. It's hard not to love Jalen Brunson and all those guys on the squad, and rooting for my guy Hartenstein. I don't think they're going to get swept, though. Or I don't think Philly's going to get swept. I think they're going to get one. Embiid is too good. I think they will get one. I mean, the Knicks can't lose in the first round either. They've had such a great such a great season. The fact they're locking up the two spot is huge for them. But I don't think – I think Embiid is what? What do you think? He's 70%? What did he look like? I mean, he was settling for the threes. They were letting him shoot the three. I thought Bam played him really well. I mean, they are undersized, but Bam played him really well.
And Bam's a fantastic defender. I'm not trying to say anything about Bam Adebayo in a negative fashion, but he's giving up 4 inches and probably 30, 40 pounds to Embiid. But again, you know, that speaks to how good Bam is defensively. But, you know, I legitimately think there could be a sweep here, man. Especially with that crowd in Philly, if they start turning on their boys at home, right? Let's say the Knicks go up 2-0 and then it's back home in Philly. And,
you know what it was, though? It was the Tobias. He missed like four layups in a row under like that. That was the point where it was like, yo, dog, like, can you guys make a layup? That it was like the Charles Smith Knicks thing against the Bulls that one year. You remember that? Charles Smith just could not put that thing in the hoop. And it just – that's when they started booing. But that also – I don't like that shit. It's a playing game. Like, why are your fans turning on you like that? Like, that's pretty messed up, dude.
Yeah.
I mean, you can't be booing. You gotta be rooting for your team. They are ruthless in Philly.
That's like textbook Philly fans, though. Like, across the board for all their sports, they're quick to boo. They're quick to share their thoughts with their with their teams. That's just a part of the relationship that they have with that city and their franchises. But look, I am fired up for it. I am bummed out that we're gonna miss a potential Jimmy Butler and Celtics rematch on that end. I mean, you brought that up. It was tough to watch, you know, him kind of struggle through it. Of course, he's gritty, right? He's not going to give up. That's all the quintessential stuff about Jimmy that we know already. But then to see it like really, you know, aggravate something that did not look good. And it does feel like now their season is over. We expect the Chicago Bulls that took care of the Hawks. We don't know, have to go into that game.
I do want to, though.
Okay, all right.
Because it's the complete opposite. You're saying the fans booing in Philly. Like, Chi-Town was lit last night. Like, that was lit. And obviously, like, Atlanta does not have enough. They looked awful. You know, DeJounte had a couple nice plays. Trey was just throwing the ball to the third row. Every time I looked up from my computer, I was doing work last night. Trey Young's throwing the ball either in the third row or to somebody that's not playing. I don't know if it's because of his new aerodynamic hairdo or the beard he's growing or whatever it is. They just did not look good. That's another team that's about to get broken up real quick, fast. Mm-hmm. Trae Young's going to be out of there because that shit just ain't working. They cannot spend another year doing it. It was crazy looking at the numbers. Like, DeJounte's great when Trae's not playing. Trae's great when DeJounte's not playing. And then they're even when they're playing together. Like, they're just not better at all. So they got to figure that shit out. And I think they're going to stick with DeJounte. But it was right on cue for our boy Kobe White to have a career night last night, 42 points. But, Drew, you know what sucks about it? It's a career night that doesn't count as a career night because it's a playing game. 42. And, you know, we brought up on the last show, most improved player, I had Kobe because Kobe's nice. And this wasn't like a fluke game. Like, oh, he had it was like a Nick Batum, like 8 3-pointers, 6 3-pointers, whatever. He was giving the business the whole night. He was taking that shit to the rack. He was shaking bake. He was knocking down deep threes, logo threes. The dude was just nice last night, and it was perfect going off of what we were talking about last week. Look, they don't need Lonzo Ball. They got Kobe at a great deal. I think it's like $30 million right now.
I think
it's probably the best 3 years
for 36 or something like that, I think.
It's like a Herb Jones deal. Yeah. This is like the best contract you can have. I say you cut ties with Lonzo. I mean, that sucks to cut Lonzo because of the injuries and whatnot, but you have Kobe there to back up Lonzo, and now this happens. You're seeing how good this kid is. They obviously need way more for their team to be, you know, to make it to the finals and whatnot. But he looked great, man, and those fans were all over it. I loved it.
Yeah, massive performance from Kobe White. Bad from Trae Young. Bad from Trae Young and the Hawks. And it does feel like that the Hawks have to do something, right? They got to trade one of those guys. It just feels like that is what they need to do. And given what given the fact that they drafted Luka Doncic and then traded for Trae in that moment, I mean, golly, sometimes you just really get the short end of the stick here. And for them to trade away that guy that they
Here's a quick question, not to interrupt you. Who do you think feels worse, Atlanta for trading for Trae Young, or Vlade for taking Marvin Bagley over Luka?
It has to be Vlade.
It has to be Vlade.
There is
right?
no, I mean, there is no.
He's known the kid since he was like 9. What the hell?
And at least Atlanta got Trae Young, who brought them to an Eastern Conference Finals. I mean, Bagley was out of the Sacramento within three, four years. So, Vlade, I mean, I still don't understand how he has ties to the organization after that.
Like, are you not fired?
Yeah, I don't. I mean,
you know, you speak his language. You've seen this kid forever.
It's the biggest oversight on the planet. And I just don't understand. I mean, this is what happens when sometimes you draft for need as opposed to drafting the best available player, mm-hmm. right? Vlade's was probably like, we have De'Aaron Fox. We have this guy. Like, why would we need another point guard? Like, that doesn't make any sense. We'll draft this, pretty talented, athletic power forward that we could use. And then, of course, obviously, that goes down in the history books, man. It's like one of the worst selections of all time.
Bagley was nice, though, man. Like, good. I was on the Bagley train, too.
What was
like, yo, I think we talked about it. I'm like, yo, this guy's ready for the league, you know?
But we didn't have the generational knowledge of Luka Doncic.
You know who did? Vlade. Vlade had that. Vlade had all that.
It is the biggest whiff in basketball history from my perspective, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, it would be one thing, right, if it was one of these GMs, let's call him whoever was in charge. I think it might have been – I can't remember who was in charge of the Atlanta Hawks. Might have been Landry Fields. Might have been the guy in front of Landry at that point. But that is an understandable one. You go, okay, Trae Young, unbelievable All-American player. Luka, we have no idea. He plays in Spain. It's a different game over there. He's so young and da-da-da. And, you know, he's not an athletic, juggernaut either, right? He wasn't, like, dunking on everybody. But still, that is the biggest mistake in potentially in the Kings franchise history.
I mean, you're talking to the guy who's blown more draft day trades.
Right.
You're talking to the guy. I mean, shit, Olawakandy, and yep. We had Vince Carter. You know what I'm saying? Like, mm-hmm. just anyway, don't get me started because I'm actually bringing that up at the end of the show. Great game by Coby White.
Yes.
I don't care that much about it. I think so. Chicago gets
Miami.
Miami, and that hopefully Chicago's going to be able to pull that out. I'm going to be rooting for them
because
I'm
rooting for Coby. So, you know, Miami has no Butler and no Rozier. He has like a neck problem, or maybe I think it was a neck problem. I could be way off on that if it's not, but I know Rozier's not playing. And then no Caruso for the Bulls. Even with all that, it's going to be a really bad game. First, number one, not looking forward to watching it. We'll watch it, but I'm not looking forward to it. But I think you got to take the Bulls, even though it will be in Miami. Miami's still favored by a point and a half. And again, when it comes to this kind of stuff, hard to rule out Miami, even without their best player and maybe their second or third best player. Hard to rule that out. But I would have to put my money on Chicago at this point. And again, does not matter at all who wins this series. Who wins, you know, who won in those playoff games? The fucking Celtics. The Celtics won in those play-in games that just took place. They're just licking their chops going like, we could rest Porzingis for this entire first round if we wanted to. They probably won't. But I guarantee if they go up 3-0, I would be sitting Porzingis. The last thing you want is him to roll his ankle in a potential sweep to end the series. But that's neither here nor there yet. Celtics continue to win on and off the court.
You want to go through some of these matchups and give our picks for what we have going on? Yeah,
you want to stick in the East because we did. I mean, yeah. We essentially touched on the Celtics and the Knicks and the Sixers. You want to jump into the Bucks and the Pacers?
Let's do it.
This is my upset of the tournament. I'm Pacers all day. This is a pretty obvious one for most people. If you look at the regular season record between these guys, granted, Halliburton was insane for the majority of these games, and he's been more sane recently with his level of play. But the Pacers just run the Bucks out of the gym every single time they play them. And no Giannis, at least for the beginning part of this series. I still think the Bucks should rest him. They should just shut him down for the season. That's mm-hmm. what I talked about that in the last podcast. I still believe that. Damian Lillard should have, you know, maybe 40, 50 points in a couple of these games. It won't matter because the Pacers will score 150 points.
Yeah.
And so this is the fun upset of the East Coast for me is Pacers in five, dude. Like
that's spicy, Drew.
Well, because you have Siakam there now as well, right? This is part of the things like, you know, the Pacers won these games even without Siakam on the mm-hmm. team. So this is going to be a fun one. I think the problems with Milwaukee, we've outlined them over the course of the year. They still struggle to play defense. And especially without their defensive, like number one, I mean, the overall number one, Giannis is the team essentially,
yeah.
Without him, it's impossible to think that they can do anything, as far as winning these games, even though they will be at home. And so I think most of the money, in my opinion, this is going to be a gambler's delight. Most of the money's got to be on the Pacers on this series. Smart money would be for the Pacers to take this. Even though Halliburton's not playing as good, the rest of the team's still playing pretty freaking good. And they ended the season ramping up a little bit because they were down in that, you know, 8-9 kind of where the Lakers were, like 8-9-7 somewhere in there, and they finished in the sixth seed. I think as long as Halliburton can stay healthy throughout this, because hamstrings can rear their head, it's hard to fully recover from a hamstring in the middle of a long season. But Pacers all day, man.
It all depends on Giannis, right?
Yeah. Like,
is Giannis coming back or not? And because
Giannis back, I think if Giannis misses the first game, all right, maybe. And he comes back for game two and he's like 100%, maybe we can have something. But they've proven that with Giannis on the floor, this hasn't been a problem for the Pacers.
Right, and they got a lot of beef to throw at Giannis if he's back anyways. But look, dude, the bottom line is this. Pray for Doc Rivers. If Doc Rivers gets – blown out in the first round, pray for Doc Rivers that he's even able, like, you cannot lose in the first round, dog. You can't.
It makes it a lot more acceptable if Giannis is there. Or if Giannis isn't there, right?
Fine.
It's hard to blame Doc if you go, Giannis isn't playing.
There's Doc is king of the deflection. It's somebody else's fault. I get it, okay? But, like, come on, man. This will be historic if it's a first round exit. Because it's been, look, dude, let's just call it what it is. This hasn't worked. It hasn't worked all year. Even in the second spot, I get it. But if you know basketball and you watch basketball, you can tell that there's something wrong here. They're old. They're slow. They're missing defensive, defensive issues there. Giannis and Dame still really hadn't figured it out. Like the pick and roll, like we said, this thing could be the sexiest thing in the NBA if they could figure it out. And they're not. And honestly, they were better with Adrian Griffin. They were playing better defense. They had better offense. They had a better record. And it is what it is, dude. Yeah. So at the end of the day, Doc is going to get crushed if they lose in the first round.
Yeah, again, this is one of those things where I wonder if the Bucks would reconsider the Adrian Griffin firing, right? They certainly already have reconsidered the hiring of Adrian Griffin, given the fact that they fired this guy, right? Mm-hmm. My guess is they're probably like, well, shit, we really screwed the pooch on this season, right? And Middleton really hasn't been the same kind of guy at all this whole year as well, right? Like, we knew he was banged up coming in off of last season, and they offered him a pretty sizable Brinks truck payment. And that was shocking. If you'll remember that contract extension that they gave him, they choose him over Drew Holiday, essentially, is the kind of, you know, they say, okay, we're going to bring in Dame. We'll keep Middleton, and then we'll, you know, keep Brooke Lopez, and we'll move this thing forward. This has been a catastrophe. And again, it's hard. It's so weird to say that given they're in the three seed now. They're in the three seed now. The Knicks leapfrogged them, but even still, it is a train wreck. We're witnessing the back half of the season where Doc can barely keep his team above 500. He's calling out their level of effort.
He's calling out the water boys, Doc. Dude. He's calling out the equipment manager, Miss King Deflector there, Drew.
Yeah, for sure. And I just don't see how, like, look, again, it's a much easier pill to swallow for Doc, for instance, when he goes in at the exit interview at the end of this first round and goes like, what do you want me to do? Giannis isn't playing. Right. Of course, we're going to lose this series. And if that is the case, I'll be very interested to see what they decide to do and who they would go after as far as a head coaching candidate if they move on from Doc. I do think they probably should. And my guess is that they may look at a younger up-and-coming guy, maybe someone that they connect with Giannis a little bit better. But clearly, Giannis didn't do a great job. If he was the one that put the stamp on Adrian Griffin, he didn't do enough research. He didn't do a good enough job figuring out what a head coach should be for him.
Yeah, but Drew, you can't have two former coaches on the payroll. You can't have Adrian Griffin, who's still getting paid, Doc Rivers, who's owed a lot of money.
I think he got a three-year deal, didn't he? Two- or three-year deal?
Yeah, you're still in it. Like, you can't have three dudes, you know, you're paying. So anyways, move forward. What else we got? Who's the next one?
But you're on board. You think Pacers as well?
I like the Pacers. I've always liked the Pacers. And I love Giannis too. But, like, I just don't, you know, we said at the beginning of the year too, when Dame went there, this is either going to work out perfectly and they're going to win a championship, or it's going to be a failure. A first round outing is a failure.
Yeah. Well, this is interesting. So I actually think there could be a Damian Lillard trade to the Cavs for Donovan Mitchell potentially. And so that's what we're going to jump into next, Cavs Magic. I also see an upset here given, you know, the seeding. The Cavs are in the 4 seed, Magic in the 5. I'm taking the Magic here as well. Okay. This is not necessarily as a surprising pick, you know, given that the Magic are – it's a 4-5, right? So it's a flip of a coin. Doesn't necessarily mean the Magic were a worse team at all, and especially in the back end of the season. The Magic were significantly better than the Cavs have been, and Donovan Mitchell has had a lot of random injuries happen to him over the course of the season. But the Cavs look disjointed. They do not look cohesive offensively or defensively. And a lot of that is going to be contributed to the fact that Donovan Mitchell has been in and out of the lineup so much. And look, I still think the Cavs can put out a product that will rock the Magic a little bit here, right? If Donovan goes off and you still have those defensive, you know, big boys down there, Mobley and Jared Allen, that can guard pretty well, you know, against the bigs of Orlando, especially Paolo Banchero, that'll be a very fun matchup for me to watch, is the Mobley-Banchero matchup. I think that's probably how it will look. I'm definitely taking the Magic here. The Magic have, I think, that probably the best or second best defense in the NBA, as we've talked a little bit about recently. Paolo is playing fantastic. Franz Wagner is not shooting well, but is still an excellent basketball player. Jalen Suggs, Jonathan Isaac, both made defensive teams for me, and all defensive teams for me. And I just think, I think the Magic have what it takes here. And you, when I was referring to the lack of cohesiveness and continuity there with the Cavs, the Magic have that right now. I mean, they're still relatively new as a you know, as a group, right? Paolo's only his second year. Franz is whatever, 3 or 4 years now, but they are playing as a unit. They have had pretty good injury luck this season, outside of Wendell Carter, who's had some tough times with injury, but he's back. And you know, the Wagner brothers are playing quite well, even though Franz isn't shooting well. I'm taking the Magic here. I think this one could get 6 games, you know, 7. It really depends on the heroics of Donovan Mitchell. We've seen him win games outright in the postseason in the past with 50-point performances, but I'm taking the Magic.
I don't think Jonathan Isaac played enough games to be on the defensive team. I don't think he played 65 games, which is a shame because he is one of the best defenders in the NBA. I could be wrong on that. But look, I think Donovan's not in on Cleveland. I think he's mentally checked out on Cleveland. I think he's thinking about where else he's going to go. And I've been a fan, you and I both, of Orlando all year. I like their team from top to bottom. They got bigs, they got smalls, they got defense, they're gritty, they want it. I think as bad as Franz has been shooting, I think he's one of those guys that are going to snap out of it, though. We know this guy can shoot. The dude's got range, but it hasn't really been his year this year shooting. But, you know, getting a taste of the playoffs for these guys, and how good Paolo has been, I think they got it all, dude. And I'm not, especially after that Clipper Cleveland comeback, like, I'm like, yo, dude, these guys aren't ready. And I know Donovan wasn't playing in that game, but you can't be in and out of the lineup all year and then just magically have this great playoff team. So I'm with you, Drew. We're agreeing on everything.
Well, a lot of this will come down to not just Franz, but how the Magic shoot threes, period, as a team. Because they are very streaky as a team. And this is their big flaw, is like when they're not hitting their threes, their offense can get quite stagnant. And it just is like, all right, let's pound it into Paolo at the elbow or at the top of the key and let him try and force his way downhill. And he is also a very happy trigger pulling kind of a mid-range jump shooter at times, where you go, why, what is that jump shot? Like, that's an ugly shot. It's a tough shot. You shouldn't be as willing to take that 18-footer. You need to get downhill into the basket a little bit more, and his efficiency can be a little wayward. So this is where, to me, it really will come down to, can Donovan Mitchell will this? Does Donovan Mitchell want to will this team to the next round? And can he do it from a scoring perspective? And then can the Magic, you know, be pretty efficient from shooting?
I'm trying to think of how many players on the Magic have played in a playoff game. Off the top of your head, can you think about it? Like Wendell maybe in Chicago?
Think about it. Wendell, I mean, they were bad in Chicago. Well, so Gary Harris is still on the team. He's gone through a couple of rounds of playoffs. Mm-hmm. Joe Ingles on the team well. Australian Chris Kringle, can't count him out.
He does nothing. He literally does nothing. Watch a Joe Ingles play. He does nothing anymore. Zero Fs for Joe.
I'm telling you, though, he's going to come in for whatever 14 minutes, and he's going to deliver some rebounds and some assists. He'll foul somebody really hard.
He will.
He'll jog up and down all you want. but he, you know, the speed has completely left this man's body. I'll tell you that much. But that's a, you know, it's a very valid point. Not too many of those guys have had any sort of real playoff experience. I'm looking at the roster right now.
If Gary Harris has played the most playoff games for you, You're a greenhorn.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, these are uncharted territories. We all know that Jared Allen has played. We all know that, you know, Donovan Mitchell and what he's done.
Yeah.
And I think that does mean something. Or it could be even better for the Magic, being like, dude, this is our first. We had a killer season. This is our first time in the play. First of many. If you keep this core together, this will be the first of many for Orlando. Especially with the bread that they have in the offseason. Like, They're on the up no matter what.
They're definitely one piece away from being like a really formidable team. I think next year everyone's going to be watching what they do in the offseason, what free agent they acquire, or if there's a trade involved that they can get, you know, a solid one or two guard scorer option for them. You know, Malik Monk is a name that's been thrown around a lot. Klay Thompson, as you brought up in the past. But I definitely think that they are one piece away from being legit. Donovan Mitchell could be one of those people as well. Right. I mean, again, who knows where Donovan wants to go and what's going to satisfy him. But it's certainly an overachieving season from the Magic perspective. Things are moving along much faster than I think most people, even at the GM level of the organization for the Magic, would have expected, right? Paolo is spectacular, but the rest of the group is really, you know, doing stuff here. So they have a little something, and I'm going to roll with the momentum in that series. So that does it for the East Coast. I'll just go through my picks. Obviously, Celtics going to take their first series regardless of who they play. Knicks in a win over the 76ers for me. Pacers and Magic advance from those two series. I think you're with me on all of those, right?
Same.
Yeah, okay. Let's go West Coast now. Let's start with your Clippers, because I know you had some stuff to say. I think we need to make our predictions for it. We don't have to delve into the matchup as much because we covered that on the last one. But I'm going to pick the Clippers. I think there's a really good chance this is the best series of the first round. I think there's a really good chance this goes seven. It could be really ugly for the Clippers if Kawhi Leonard is not healthy. And this has been something we haven't talked a lot about, because the assumption is they were being very cautious with Kawhi and that he was going to be 100%. Mm-hmm. So what do you got for us?
I got a lot to say. First of all, I'm so freaking nervous, dude. A week off is just absolutely crazy. Look, everybody in Clipper Nation is wondering about Kawhi. I am not worried about Kawhi. I think Kawhi is going to be playing game one. I think Kawhi is going to be playing in the playoffs. It's so funny, though, Drew, because people are looking for Kawhi. Like, we're like on the social pages, we're having these practices, these great shoot-arounds. Kawhi is in none of them. And if you look at the comments, they're like, "But where's why? Where is Kawhi?" Right? And then, like, there was this one where Paul George was taking it to the rack and there was a dude's hand in the picture. And they're like, "I think that's Kawhi's hand." Like, everybody's looking for Kawhi. I freaking hate it. We do this every year, Drew. I wish we could do, like, a montage of us in Kawhi Leonard not knowing what the hell he's going to do, right? Or if he's playing or not. I am perfectly fine with saying, it's funny, I hit Tomer up the other morning.
Mm-hmm.
I hit Tomer up, the beat writer for the Clippers, and I'm like, look, bro, I can get secrets out of the Pentagon faster than I can get is Kawhi Leonard playing game one, right? And so he hits me back with, you know, there's optimism that Kawhi is going to be playing game one. And then Shams came out today saying that Kawhi is going to be ready. But I want to bring something up that makes a lot of sense. And you're hearing it first on the Follow Through with Clips and Drew. So DJ Amatic, one of my followers, on a big Clipper fan and whatnot. I want to tell you what this man said to me today. And it makes total sense. He's like, look, I'm an X-ray tech. I'm not going to name the company.
Mm-hmm.
A few times a week, I do C-arm for, I don't know what that is, for sports medicine, and we do these injections. Now this is coming out. My guess is he had swelling weeks ago, and the cortisone shot was done well over 2 weeks ago. The longer they don't go full speed, the longer the medication will last and work. So essentially, Kawhi has been rebooting for the playoffs. I'm like, damn, that sounds so right. I said, wow, dude, thank you. I might use that on the show tonight. He said, yeah, no problem. It makes sense now. His last game was March 31st, probably was already playing through it. My guess is swelling and inflammation have been managed, but this was a let's get him ready for the stretch. I asked a nurse I work with. She said they can do whatever they want after the injections. They recommend letting the injection settle and spread before major movements and overexerting. Kawhi should be good for at least 3 months. This makes perfect sense. Okay, because look, where we've seen Kawhi, like, at practice not practicing, but he looks happy, he looks muscular, there's no brace on, you know what I'm saying? He was given his jersey, his USA jersey, the other day. He walked in to Ty's office. He looked perfectly fine. This makes sense. He's had inflammation in the knee. That's what he's been worried about. And if this is the case, cortisone shots, letting it run its course, get the inflammation down, like, okay. Yep. But this is the problem with the Clippers, Drew. Just tell us that. Instead of playing, where is Kawhi? Just say, man, he's resting the knee. He's going to be fine for game one. Or he's resting the knee. We're going to try to get him for game two. Because we, again, PTSD, we have issues with Kawhi and injuries. And if it's an injury, just let us know. But just say he's getting cortisone shots. We don't need to play this cloak and dagger bullshit. You know, Just tell us what's going on with Kawhi. Clippers are practicing the with Doncic jerseys on, with his, which is so weird. Everybody's wearing Dallas jerseys. Look, I think our vibes are high. You're hearing it from me first. I think Kawhi's playing first game, and everything relies on Kawhi in this series. I think, honestly, Drew, I think we could beat the Dallas Mavericks without Kawhi. It'll be very difficult. Right. I think we can beat them, but I'm all in. And, dude, we have James Harden and Russell Westbrook and Paul George. We have enough. But Kawhi is going to be playing in the goddamn game, Drew. My question to you is, does Russell Westbrook start this series?
No.
I don't think so either, and people are calling for it.
No.
I think it could be an adjustment. Like, shit, if we're getting cooked at the point guard position in game one and possibly game two, Ty is all for adjustments and whatnot. But I don't think they start Russ either.
No, Russ is the most effective when he's coming in with that second unit and changing the pace, changing the scheme of things. I love him when you guys run the like center Westbrook, really throws teams off a lot. No, definitely not putting him in the starting lineup. But this whole series to me, as you rightly said, does come down to if Kawhi is available. And all signs point in the direction that he is with everything that you just laid out for us. So if Kawhi plays and is available through the whole series, I'm taking the Clippers in seven. It'll be a battle, and the league has done no favors for your Clippers, starting you off with a 12:30 start on a Sunday, which is the nightmare start.
Why NBA? Why do you do this? There's nobody playing that. The Lakers aren't playing that day. And even if the Lakers were playing that day, we're the four seed. Give us the game. I'm tired of this bullshit. Look, Drew, I'm sorry. You fired me up. You brought it up. 12:30 game. Clippers are notorious for horrible afternoon games. Minus that Cleveland game that we did have a good one the other
day. That's
true.
Yeah.
Look, okay, I'm pissed off that they did this. And we have another one the following Sunday. Game five. is a fucking 12:30 game again. Why, NBA? I'm so pissed off at them. Only caveat to this is we've had a week and a half off. There should be no excuse to not be ready for game one at 12:30. We're not coming on a back-to-back. This isn't a, you know, we played Thursday and it's a Saturday 12:30 game. Nah, dude, we've had a week and a half off.
Right.
If we get blown out, there is no excuse for the 12:30 game. But I think it's bullshit on the NBA's part, man. You're right.
I've thought a lot about this because this is like over the years that we've done this show together. It is I would love to know the exact record of Clipper home games at 12:30. Like what the record wins and losses.
4%.
Yeah, it's 4%. Not good. It is not good. But I do think this is actually an NBA play for Doncic for the European crowd. If you think about the time difference, the earlier the start is in the West Coast, it's only I think an 8 and 9 hour difference there. They're trying to get more eyeballs on the game. This is a play for globalization to get, you know, the Eastern Europeans that love Luka able to watch the game as opposed to having to stay up till 3 o'clock in the morning. So this is what I've come up with. It's still shitty for you guys, undeniably shitty. But I do think that's where, if I had to guess as to why they penciled you in like that, that's probably it.
Two more things with Clipper talk. I cannot wait for these games. I'm so nervous, but there are two things I want to bring up in Clipperland. Number one, is the signing of Kai Jones out of left field.
Yeah.
And you had mentioned when we went through, we went in on the whole Kai Jones thing. We wanted him to get help. The dude is extremely talented. I think this is this could turn out to be a low key fucking great pickup. Okay. It seems like he got his mental health together. He thanked the Players Association for getting him the help that he needed. He seems well thought out. He shaved his head to get rid of, like, you know, a rebrand, said he's been watching Kobe videos and, you know, wanted to shave his head. He seems well spoken. And honestly, this is the kind of player that the Clippers need. I don't know if he's going to play in the playoffs. I don't know what the deal is, but it's one of those guys. It's like the Gafford on Dallas. These high energy, high athletic dudes. There's this thing in my head where it's like, yo, if this works, James Harden, Russell Westbrook, Kai Jones, second team type thing, like, really works. When Zubac's getting cooked, you know, by a faster center or faster forward, whatever it is, Kai might be the guy to come in. I like this pickup. You know, we say all the time, low risk, high reward guys. We did it with John Wall. We did it with Russell Westbrook. We're doing it with Kai Jones. And if it pans out, man, this could be low key one of the best pickups of the season.
Yeah, I think my guess is he probably won't play very much at all. Just knowing the depth of the squad that you have already and how recent of an addition he is. But I like the idea of him playing alongside Russ, because if there's one thing that you lack, it is a big that has super athleticism, and now you have that. And he's not the biggest guy, but he is the most athletic, potentially the most athletic player that we have in the NBA. So having him alongside Russ and having that chaos and having that ability to throw energy, a lob to a guy, is something that you didn't have. Like, Plumlee's still pretty athletic, but he's getting up there in years now. He's not Mr. Plumlee that in the dunk contest like he was almost a decade ago now. And for as good as Tyson, Zubar, those guys are below the rim kind of players. So it is a nice addition to fill out the roster. And mostly this is a great story for Kai and for the NBPA. This is a massive feather in the cap for the Players Association that has taken hits on not being there well enough for the mental health issues that have happened to a lot of players over the years. So this could be a massive feel-good story for the entire, you know, Clippers organization and the NBA as a whole. So this is really cool and potentially awesome and promising.
I agree, and I think Ty's going to experiment a little bit, because I think we're going to need that in the athleticism with them. They got younger legs than us with Lively and with Gafford, those kind of guys. Like, we're going to need some energy, and I don't think he's going to play a lot of minutes, but I think Ty might throw him in there, dude. And there might be something special with him. We're seeing how great the lobs are with Harden and Zub, right? Yeah. And if you can just put Kai Jones in that position, it could work out well. Kudos to the Los Angeles Clippers. I want to bring up one last thing with the Clippers that I thought was really cool. And again, you know how much I love Steve Ballmer. I thought it was absolutely awesome that the final game of this season, we played Houston. It was our last game at Crypto at Staples. And Ballmer fronted the whole bill, concession stand bill. That is just – nobody does that, man.
Incredible.
It is incredible, dude. And if you got the bread, cool. But, like, yo, dude, no other owner in the NBA is going to do that. Awesome gesture. I was really stoked to hear that.
Incredible. That is an incredible gesture from Ballmer out of nowhere. No, that's – I don't know if that's ever been done ever. Like, in the history of sports, I can't remember anyone that. Even when concessions were 5 cents for a bag of popcorn, you know what I'm saying? Like, I don't think that's ever been done.
Nah.
And for him to usher that fan base again, like, you know, kind of tipping the hat, thank you guys for being here. Let's move over to our own stadium. Like, it's just so smart. Ballmer is very smart. And that was just a really incredible gesture right there. Last piece that I have for you is I actually like the idea of James Harden wearing a Luka Doncic jersey in practice, because as I've said since day one, Luka is James Harden. Like, the more that we know about Luka, the more he looks just like James Harden looked all those years in Houston. I think that's a perfect mimic for the defense. Have James Harden run the Luka Doncic, put a jersey on him, make him run the Luka Doncic shit. I think that's about as good of practice as you're going to get without having Luka actively on the court.
I see that. I see where – it just made no sense to me.
Yeah. Like, okay. It's a little stupid, honestly.
It's a little AAU-ish,
yeah,
bro.
Yeah, like, exactly.
But the way you put it, yeah, okay. Hey, James, you're Luka, and we're going to play – yeah, I get it.
Let's run some defensive scenarios that way. I think that could be it. All right, so you're obviously taking your Clippers. Are you comfortable to name a number of games that you think you're going to end it in?
I'm not comfortable at all, bro, but I'm not comfortable at all. I honestly, dude, like, I think we have a lot to throw at Luka.
Yep.
And I think with everything that's on the line, legacies that are on the line, with just everything that's gone through this season, I think we could beat these. I think, you know what, dude? I can't, with my heart and my health issues I've had this year, I can't go a game seven. And I swear to God, if they do a game seven on a fucking Sunday at 12:30, I'm sorry, not happening. Clippers in six. Clip gang or don't bang, bro.
I love it. All right, let's move on to the last series. This one's been the hardest for me to call. It shouldn't be, but it turns out it is, in my weird, you know, way that I'm thinking about this series. It is the 3-6 between the T-Wolves and the Phoenix Suns. I want to just pencil in the T-Wolves. I want to just say, no, they'll win in five or six games. Like, the Suns don't have it. But we've seen what the Suns have done. They closed the season. Last 10 games, I think Ryan Russillo, on one of the shows I've listened to, outlined how difficult that last 10 games was for them. And they were on a roll to the point where we thought they were going to be in that, 7, 8, 9 area, potentially looking in. before that run that they made. And lo and behold, they get in the sixth seed. They face these T-Wolves, which is still, you know, they're still kind of figuring out where Cat is. And he comes back at the end of the season. He doesn't look 100%. But it's hard for me to say that the Suns can put things together in this series and win 4 out of 7 against the number one defense in the T-Wolves with a guy like Anthony Edwards on that team and the capabilities that Karl Anthony Towns has, that Naz Reid has. I think I'm going to take the T-Wolves, but I don't think it's going to be as easy as everyone might assume. So I'm going to go T-Wolves in 6 just because a part of me wants to pick the Suns, but I'm not going to do it. I'm not going to do it. T-Wolves in 6 because defense is what matters in the playoffs. I have to stick with my creed on that. And if anything has been shown, the Suns are not a defensive team here. So can they win a couple games by scoring 130 points, and can they get hot and KD and Book just go off? Of course they can. But I'm excited for this series, but I think T-Wolves in 6.
I got T-Wolves in 5, dude. Oof, I mean, who's gonna check Ant? And then it comes down to the bench. It comes down to the bench, and it comes down to the bigs, man. They are too big for Phoenix. That's just what it is. And I also, God, I don't know if you guys knew this or not, I don't like the Suns, and I don't want them to do well, okay? And I just think Ant, they're very well coached, and I just think there's too many bigs down low. And Nurk watch was a real thing this year. Nurk was great. He exceeded a lot of people's expectations, him and Grayson. Grayson has not been great for them lately.
Extension.
Grayson
has extension for Grayson.
Got kudos. That bag. He deserves it.
Yeah.
He deserves
it. Best shooter in the NBA.
But I think just the swag and where Anthony Edwards wants to go with his career right now, I think he's going to do everything in his power to get out of that first round. They have the adult in the room in Conley to help everybody out here.
Yeah.
Like you said, defense wins championships. I'm taking Minnesota in 5, and then the Phoenix shit just crumbles to the ground to ashes, dude. It did not work. That's what I want to call. Who's next, Drew?
That's pretty much it. I mean, we can touch on OKC if you want to touch on how you feel that they're going to do against one of those teams. We've already talked about my Nuggets and Lakers. Do you have a pick for the Lakers-Nuggets series?
Man, look, if anybody – look, I'm not going to hate on the Lakers. If anybody can match up against the Nuggets, it's them. And I'll never root against – like, I'll never bet against LeBron. I just – you know, I don't trust D'Lo. I don't think shit, man. I mean, I'm going with the defending champs. Yeah. If you're putting the money on it, I'm going with the champs. Joker's too good. But I want you specifically and people listening to the show, I think Michael Porter is going to be shook this series. I really do. I think he's going to be mentally shook this series.
Yeah, and I still think that they're good enough to handle that. Like if MPJ scores 10 points in the game, that's enough. You know, that's enough for him to. Right. So it's, you know, I'd love to limit the 20 point outburst from him. And if we're gonna do it, look, my brain goes, you know, Nuggets in 5 or 6, but my heart says Lakers in 7 is what I'm pulling for. And I know a Boston Ben over there is pulling for Lakers all the way, right? Because he sees down the line and he goes, look, the Celtics have the easiest fucking path to the finals, maybe in the history of the Celtics' path since Bill Russell was there when there was only 9 teams or whatever. So he's looking down the line and he texted me out of the blue once the Lakers won the game and said, at least take him to 5 or 6. At least give me 5 or 6. Let's wear him down a little bit before they get rolling. So Lakers in 7. I'll say that. I love it. I want it, but it's probably not going to happen.
Well, you know who wants a game 7, bro? Is Adam Silver. He wants 7 games of Lakers Nuggets. Let's milk, just squeeze as much LeBron as we can get out of him before he's out of here. So I'm with you on that.
So let's just touch on this OKC just quickly for me, because I actually think they're going to struggle in this opening series. I don't think it's going to be a walk in the park. Granted, you know, the Kings are banged up if they're the ones that advance. I think if Malik Monk gets back for them in some capacity, that could get quite dirty and ugly for Oklahoma City. If it's the Pelicans, all right, maybe it's a little bit easier, but maybe not, because the Pelicans are and have been spectacular at times in this series. But it just you assume Zion won't be there. So I don't think it's going to be a clean sweep for OKC. I do think they will advance. If it's the Kings, though, I wouldn't be shocked if they take them to 6, potentially 7, with how good the Kings can be And with just their, they play so fast, man. I just keep going back to that Warriors Kings game that we just witnessed in the play-in. If the Kings can bring that level of energy and intensity every night, they're a tough out for any team, regardless of this fresh, you know, new playoff lacking experience team in Oklahoma City. I still think they'll advance out OKC, but it might be a little tighter than most people think.
OKC and Sacramento would be fun.
That'd be
OKC
a fun one.
OKC and Pelicans would be freaking awesome if Zion's in.
Exactly.
Right? And that's just not going to happen. So I got OKC too. You got a final thought for me, Drew?
I do. I think we both need to quickly readdress our outrage with the Allen Iverson statue. With more context, we now know that this is not a one-off statue that they decided to make a miniature version of. It is in a row of all these other miniature statues. I don't know who, maybe the decision and the outrage should be with why they decided to miniaturize versions of statues anyway. Why not just go all the way out and do a regular size statue for a human being when you have, as you rightly stated, Rocky standing 9 feet tall in the middle of the city. You have actual legends that lived and played in that franchise. And they're all small. So it made, obviously for me, I felt a little bit like, all right, we blew it out of proportion a little bit. Now that we know that the practice facility where the statue is, it's just another one in the row. How do you feel about it?
I feel that if that's the case, that shit should have been done a decade ago. Put that little tiny ass statue up a decade ago, even when AI was still playing. And why are they little statues outside the training facility? Give Allen Iverson a freaking statue, a real statue. If Kobe's going to get three at Crypto, AI deserves one at Philly's house. That's just what I'm saying. And yes, okay. Maybe I was a little vocal about it. Maybe I was a little dramatic about it. Okay. But so was a lot of other people, dude. And honestly, with Allen Iverson patting the head of his statue, he was even shocked in how small it was. So he was just, you know, I don't take back what I said. It was first reactions, and it just seems so ridiculous to wait this long to give this real legend. Like, I'm sorry, Allen Iverson doesn't need to be next to a statue of Theo Ratliff, bro. Okay, he deserves way more than that. I don't know whose statue he's next to, but
Bobby Jones, I think, is out there too.
He doesn't need to be between Theo Ratliff and Matt Geiger. He deserves way more than that. That's what I'm saying. So I apologize to no one with being as vocal as I was.
Yeah, I agree with that. It was illuminating, at least, and it helped be like, okay, they weren't just doing him dirty for no reason. I agree, though. Dr. J and AI need big statues out in front of the actual arena. Like, this whole practice arena shit is also weird. Like, just put the statues out next to the actual arena. Who goes to the practice facility?
Nobody goes to a practice facility. It's just ridiculous. It makes no sense, dude. So, and you know what, dude? Clips and Drew weren't the only ones thought it was too small. Everybody did.
Yeah.
And they need to be better at giving it with context. So whatever, dude. I'm still standing by what I said. That shit is weak. My final thought, Drew. Thank you for saying that, though, because, I mean, call it what it is. I get it.
Yeah.
My final thought is a two-parter. It's going to be very quick. I wanted to get into Jonte Porter getting banned from the NBA, joining an exclusive club of Donald Sterling and Jonte Porter. We knew that this was going to happen. We didn't know how dumb this guy was, though. Like, literally, when the numbers come out, you're like, really, bro?
Yeah.
You're gonna sacrifice your $2.3 million salary for $22,000, and you're going to be dumb enough to, like, put 80 racks or tell somebody to put 80 racks on if I'm going to play or not, and betting against your own team to lose, and, you know, making bets while he's in the G League and shit. You know you're wrong, bro. You deserve all of this. I do not feel sorry for him. I do not feel one. I'm not shedding one tear over Jonte Porter, because this guy sacrificed everything he worked for in his life to be an NBA player, and you did some dumb shit like that. So you deserve the lifetime ban, and you're going to go sell farmer's insurance, bro. That's what you're going to be doing now, if you're lucky. If you're lucky to do that, and your brother is probably ashamed of you, your parents are probably ashamed of you, and you owe everybody, especially your teammates, bro, I know you're not allowed in the facility anymore or anywhere near an NBA arena, but you better send a group text to your homies and be like, dude, my bad. I was in a really bad place. No excuses. I don't feel bad for Jontay Porter one bit.
Hold on, because the good news for Jontay is that he can gamble as much as he wants now.
Yeah, go ahead. Go down to Commerce Casino, bro. Go put have a great time.
Put all the money you want on there. You better get fucking good at it. You better get fucking good at it, because that 2.8 that you earned in your contract is going to dry up real fast.
Real quick, bro.
Real fast.
Yo, Mike, I got a really good idea, man. Anyways, that ain't going to happen. I don't feel sorry for you at all, Jontay Porter. I need to take one moment to address Blake Griffin retiring.
Yeah.
Made me feel really old. It really me did. Too. Made me feel old. Even my neighbor, Lenny, in the back over here, he's an old guy. And he came up to me the other day, and he's like, hey, I heard Blake's retiring today. And he's like, how long has he been in the NBA? 18, 19 years? I'm like, nah, dude, 14. I just want to say that, like, I'm glad Blake is moving on. I'm glad Blake isn't hanging on. I mean, he was done 2 years ago. We all know this. But, like, Blake was something so special. And Prime Blake was a real show, man. And Blake was our golden child. Blake changed everything within our organization. I know I've said this many times. Blake made us cool. Chris Paul made us great, made us a good team. And Blake delivered several memories. A lot of new Clipper fans are from the Lob City era. You know, Blake turned on a lot of new fans. And I know he's going to be great in his post-NBA career. Hopefully it's acting. Hopefully it's writing or
stand-up comedy,
if you want to do that. I think he's going to be great at it. But, like, look, man, Prime Blake was so special, and it's so many memories. And I know we got to talk about him a couple shows ago about the great dunks and whatnot. But this guy was just a real quick story. His rookie year, before he got hurt against the Lakers on that dunk, they played one preseason game down here at Camp Pendleton, down here in San Diego. And my NBA ref friend refed that game. And, like, I didn't get to go down and watch it, but he refed it. And immediately after the game, I'm like, bro, so what do you think? And I'll never forget it. He's like, yo, he is a fucking deer. And a deer, like, nobody calls a basketball player a deer. When you think about, like, what deers do, it made so much sense. And he was just saying, yo, this guy is freakishly athletic. He was all over the floor. He's everything. Like, it was the first no-brainer number one pick in a while, probably, yeah, like, since Braun. Anyways, he means a lot to us. He means a lot to Clipper Nation. And it was sad. And he kind of, with his letter, he made it funny too, just like, yeah, in a complete Blake way. Yeah. But since we're throwing out tiny statues to everybody, I think Blake deserves a statue at the new arena. I think he does. And I think he should be the first one to get one. And it would be awesome if we can do that. And so him and Ballmer can, like, just squash the beef and whatever it was. But yeah, what do you think?
Yeah, it made me feel old as well when I saw it, and I was like, "Damn, he's already retiring!" Like, because me and him are virtually the same age. I think we're right around the same age, and I will always remember my first glimpse of Blake when he was at Oklahoma, and man, oh man, did he just jump off the page at Oklahoma, dude! Holy shit! Him and his brother, they were just like the Duncan duos, you know, like it Taylor could throw down too, not mm-hmm. nearly as, you know, big or as tremendous as Blake. But Taylor Griffin was a hooper as well in his own right, and had a little bit of a run, little cup of coffee in the NBA. Phoenix, but Blake was
special.
He was appointment television. It was the first season of my life that I tuned into way more Clipper games than ever before, right? Like, you know, growing up in LA, you got the games on all the time. My dad was never shy to throw on a Clipper game, especially if they actually had, you know, a decent squad. Even when they were shitty, we'd throw them on and watch them lose. They'd be up by 12. They'd lose a game by 12. That was like the whole thing. Pretty much every game for like 10 years. And so we would watch this, you know, this awesome athletic game-changing type of team that they had with DJ and Blake and Chris and JJ, and, you know, all they were missing through all those years was a guy like Jimmy Butler. If they had Jimmy Butler on that team, man, y'all would have won one or two championships for sure. but never could find that small forward to fit within that role that really helped on both sides of the ball. Caron Butler, the list is long of guys that went through and tried to be that for you guys. But Blake, man, my God, what an incredible, incredible athlete. I mean, highlight after highlight. And it's unfortunate, you know, all the injuries that happened to him even before he stepped foot in a Clipper jersey into the arena that first year and then later in his career. And it definitely shortened a career that I thought would be longer. But it's understandable, man. He's been banged up and a lot of surgeries, as he alluded to in his letter. But yeah, hats off to Blake. What an awesome career. I think it's going to be difficult for Ballmer to put up a statue of Blake because a lot of those memories are tied to the previous owner and Donald Sterling. But I would love it if Blake gets a statue. I think he's probably the number one Clipper ever.
Yeah. I mean, look, there's
as
so
of
many.
Now, as of right now,
Blake is the most important.
Yeah.
You know, I think Blake is the most important. I mean, there's so many iconic guys. Like, yeah, there's freaking Darius Miles, if you want to go that far. But he wasn't that great for us. He was fun. That was a fun era. Yeah. But he's not statue worthy. You know what I mean? There was the Elton Brand era. Elton got us good to the freaking playoffs finally to get, you know what I mean? Which was awesome. And then you have, you know, Chris and you have Jamal and you have Lou who were really important. Caveman's probably not getting one. Caveman's probably not getting one.
He was an all-star.
He was a one-time all-star. I mean, I think we're seeing with Ballmer how he's catering to the fans and we're asking for it. And if the thing is statues for great players for a franchise, Blake would be number one on the list. And I don't see who else would be number one.
You think Jersey retired at least for him, maybe?
You have to, man. Like, look, dude, we have to start the process at some point, man. You got to retire somebody's jersey, all right? We have to do it. We have to form our own legacy. It's all part. Everybody has retired jerseys in their arena. Everybody does, except for us, you know? And of course, we want the chip first, but like, let's pay homage. If we're gonna start this new culture, this new brand, let's pay honor to the guys that got us here.
I don't think Charlotte has any jerseys hanging up.
First team I thought about. First team. I'm like, I don't think Charlotte does either. There ain't a Del Curry or a Baron Davis jersey hanging up in that motherfucker. Where's Jamal Mashburn when you need him?
Larry Johnson?
Alonzo Mourning? I think Mourning has to.
Mourning?
That's a good question.
Oh yeah, maybe Mourning. Maybe Alonzo Mourning. That would be
not a Christian Leitner. Not Alonzo Mourning. Hey, we got to get out of here, bro. It's one, and we've gone an hour and a half.
Yeah.
Give Blake Griffin a statue. If you guys are listening this far into the podcast, follow us on YouTube. Press the subscribe button. If you're listening to us on Spotify or Apple or Google Play, wherever, press subscribe. Leave us a review. Give us a 5-star review. We're going to be back in a couple days. It's the freaking playoffs. Game one is coming up on Saturday. And Sunday, we got game ones happening all weekend. I am trying to lobby to do a podcast at least 2 or 3 times a week during the playoffs. We got to sell Drew on that. And I think he's down. I'm going to convince him tomorrow when he comes up for the play-in tournament. It's the follow through with Clips and Drew, and we're Ghost.
Thank you.